host, Jenny Worthington, and I will be introducing you to people and organizations around the world who are working for animal welfare. We're being called to participate in making the world a better place, and the people I will be talking with are on the front lines of critical work that we need to know about so that we can support them. I hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome back to Hello Animal Talks. I'm Jenny Worthington, and I'm so excited to bring to you people and organizations around the world who are working for animal welfare. And today, it's really great to be able to introduce you to Cheryl Fink, who works for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. She is the campaign director for Canadian Wildlife. She has a degree in wildlife biology and is an expert on Canada's East Coast seal hunt. She's working diligently to bring an end to seal hunting and getting politicians, the public, and the media involved. So she's going to tell us about all her work with that. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So how did you get started in this? Clearly, if you have a wildlife biology degree, you're interested in wildlife from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And I did come more from a biological interest as opposed to the animal welfare side of things. I studied wildlife biology in a university, and one of the case studies that was presented to us in a resource policy class in our final year was about the Canadian seal hunt. And I think that the message that they were trying to get across to us as a group of young wannabe biologists, I think we had this idea that we were going to go out into the world and we were going to be scientists and we were going to be biologists, and biology was going to save all of the animals and save the endangered species. And I think the seal hunt was put to us as an example of, you know, when governments make decisions, policy decisions that affect wildlife and affect animals, they're not always based on science. Sometimes science isn't even the main consideration. They're based on politics, public opinion, all kinds of other things. So, and the seal hunt is a really great example of that, of an industry that doesn't really have a large biological basis. It's based on politics, and it continues because of politics.
Okay, so just to clarify, if you're in wildlife biology, what exactly are you studying? Are you in a lab studying cells, or like diagnosing why an animal died? Are you out in the field sort of figuring out what they're eating, that kind of thing?
Okay, it was some time ago that I was in university, so let me cover it with that. But yeah, there was a lot of laboratory work looking at cells, looking, you know, dissecting invertebrates and all of that sort of thing, but also learning about, you know, some field work and ecological interactions, how communities interact in nature. And then a little bit again, too, of how policy decisions are made in the real world. Right. And that it's not just biology. There's a whole suite of other factors that go into determining how we interact with nature and how we interact with our planet.
Okay, so it's very broad and pretty much covers a lot of things.
And that's probably just my memory, because the whole science part was just, that was the stuff that you had to get out of the way in the first and second years, right?
Right. Okay, so it's so interesting to me that this is still going on, these seal hunts, because I remember, and I'm almost 60, I remember the seal hunts being a big deal when I was growing up. And seeing pictures of the little harp seal pups and their moms, and then the horrible bludgeoning pictures. And it just was horrific. And I thought there was such an uproar that that was put to rest. Now, did it stop for a while and then restart again?
Essentially, it did. Your memory is correct. As you say, the seal hunt was, it was, you know, happening in Canada essentially since the 1600s. But it started to get, you know, in the 50s, between 1950 and 1970, it was ramping up. The harp seal population was starting to decline. And that's when groups like IFA were formed in 1969, when these images of the seal hunt started coming out and being spread around the world. And we were successful, as you say. In 1983, Europe put a ban on the import of white coat seal fur products. Mm-hmm. And that was the main market for the Canadian seal hunt at the time. So as you say, in the mid to late 1980s, the hunt virtually disappeared. It went from tens of thousands of animals, or hundreds of thousands of animals being killed, down to just a few tens of thousands. I think a lot of people, a lot of organizations thought that the seal hunt was over. What happened is in Atlantic Canada, we had the collapse of the Atlantic cod fishery in 1992. There's a moratorium on cod. 50,000 fishermen were put out of work in Atlantic Canada. It was devastating to the economy. And at the time, scientists said, you know, we need to stop overfishing these stocks. And the politicians, of course, we blamed the Spaniards, we blamed Europeans, we blamed everything, and we blamed seals. So the moratorium was put in place. There were a lot of fishermen out of work, and we had a very ambitious fisheries minister at the time who came into power. And he basically decided to blame seals for the collapse of the cod stocks, saying that we needed to kill more seals or else they never were going to recover. And in 1996, he increased the allowable catch for harp seals and started introducing direct subsidies to fishermen to go out and kill seals, essentially paying people to kill seals. So from a political perspective, it worked very well for him. He went on to become the premier of Newfoundland. But he's sort of satisfying the economic demand or the economic need. He's satisfying this feeling like we need to do something. You know, no one wants to wait 20, 25 years for a cod stock to recover on its own. But killing seals made you feel like you were doing something proactive to help. And that's the only reason. That is the only reason that the commercial seal hunt resumed in Canada. It was because of these subsidies and because of politics. I do believe, like, if that had not happened, we wouldn't be still continuing to fight the seal hunt today. So that's kind of what brought it back. And when I started working for IFA in 1998, so it was just a couple of years after this had started, this whole resurgence of the seal hunt in Atlantic Canada. And that's been my career basically here with IFA for the past 23 years, is watching this seal hunt, which was virtually gone, come back from out of nowhere, increased to an allowable catch of 400,000 animals a year, which is the largest hunt for a marine mammal anywhere in the world. And then, I guess we'll talk about this a little bit later, but since 2009, there has been another decrease in the hunt, and we are back where we were in the 1980s. We are seeing very, very low levels of seals being killed, thanks to, I think, the success of people writing governments and writing the politicians and advocacy organizations, and we need to keep it there this time.
Right. Well, what exactly are they doing? What are these seals being used for?
Well, when the hunt came back in, here's one of the big differences. When the hunt was ended in 1983, the main target of the hunt was the white coat seal pups. Right. Pups between birth and 2 weeks of age. They're still nursing from their mothers. Mm-hmm. And of course, horrible images, you know, completely helpless animals still nursing, being killed in front of their mothers and dragged away.
And being killed with clubs so that they didn't ruin their coats, right? By having bullet holes in them and stuff like that. Yeah. So they're being clubbed to death in front of their mothers.
Yeah. Horrible. I mean, what other species, even for species that we hunt, we don't hunt the newborns generally. Like, that's just not something
true.
We do. Mm-hmm. And when the hunt was revived, we still had the European ban on the white coat skins. But what they did was they started targeting seals that were slightly older. So instead of pups that were newborn to 2 weeks, they're targeting pups now that are 3 weeks to 3 months. So they're slightly older. They've shed their white fur. It allows Canada to say, well, we don't kill white coats, which is essentially true, but you're killing an animal that's a week or 2 weeks older. As soon as they start to molt that white fur around 3 weeks of age, they're fair game to be hunted. And 98% of the seals that are killed are between 3 weeks and 3 months of age. So they're still very young pups, we'd call them. They have not yet learned to feed themselves. They've not yet learned to swim. They're still very helpless. I mean, from that perspective, really nothing has changed. And I think that's why people were still so outraged that this hunt was continuing. And the products are still primarily fur. They're using the blubber to make seal oil products. Not in the United States. You won't find them thanks to the Marine Mammal Protection Act, but Canada does export seal oil as a nutraceutical product to Asia and China. And you can buy it here in Canada. Fur oil and meat. The meat just hasn't really taken off as a market. I think that's something that the industry's tried to find markets for seal meat, but if seal meat tasted good, we would have been eating it by now. Nobody really eats seal meat here in Canada.
Yeah. How many pups does a seal mother produce? Is it usually just one pup?
Just one pup a year. The females, I think they come into breeding age around 4 or 5 years of age. That's been changing a little bit as a result of changes with climate change and changing ice conditions and that sort of thing. But let's say 5 years, and then they can have one pup a year. So, you know, the population is fairly healthy right now, but I think it's something that we definitely need to keep an eye on. One of the big concerns with the harp seals is this is a species that needs an ice platform to give birth every year. Other species like the gray seal, they've kind of adapted. They will give birth on beaches and on land, but the harp seal, I don't believe there's any documentation ever of a harp seal mother giving birth on land. They need to have this ice. And in the past 15 years or so, we've been seeing a huge decrease in the extent of the ice cover in Atlantic Canada and the thickness of that ice cover in Atlantic Canada. So what that means is it breaks up earlier in the spring. It's not as thick. Seals really need at least a 2-week, but much longer platform for those pups to be born, to nurse from their mothers, to have that resting period, to sort of learn to adapt and swim and have ice to rest on as they start migrating northward during the summer months. And without that ice, what we've been seeing is the mothers will give birth in the water and the pups will die. Mm-hmm. So they're essentially aborting their pups in the water, or they'll give birth on ice that isn't strong enough. It'll start to break up and the pups will be crushed in the ice as it starts to break up in the spring storms. This year was a terrible year for ice coverage in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. I believe it was like 10 out of the last, I don't know how many, but the majority of years recently actually have been terrible ice conditions in the Gulf of St. Lawrence for pups. And from a biological perspective, there's some thought that, or hope, I guess, that maybe the mothers will start giving birth in different areas where there still is ice, but we don't have a lot of evidence to show that that's happening or not happening yet. But we do know that the mothers that have returned to the Gulf of St. Lawrence every year to give birth to their pups, the ice is no longer there and those pups are dying.
It must be so devastating for these mothers to have their pup just, you know, taken away from them.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the video from the earlier hunt, and those are some of the most compelling images. I've put together a documentary called Hunt Watch a few years ago that was using a lot of our archival footage. And there's one scene of a white coat pup that's been clubbed and dragged away on a hooked stick, and the mother is chasing it and crying out after it. And to me, that is just the most heart-wrenching scene. And I think, you know, we forget. I think, you know, our politicians here in Canada, they like to talk about seals as a resource. It's a natural resource.
Yeah.
This is not a resource. These are sentient animals.
Right.
They can suffer. They can experience fear. They can experience pain. We need to stop thinking of animals and wildlife as a resource.
Yes, that is a huge thing for me. That's one of the reasons I'm doing this, because it seems like we're very slow to catch on to that, to the point where we're even surprised still to learn that dogs that we live with feel emotions. And that just is mind-boggling to me. But there are still articles coming out from scientific places that are like, wow, can you believe it? A dog actually grieves when its pup dies, you know, that kind of thing. And it's very frustrating because it's such a slow learning process for humans to believe that anything else is capable of thinking and feeling.
As you know, you don't need studies for, you can see it in their face. When you see a seal pup and he's looking up at the hunter and we do still club seals in Canada. That's one of the big myths, is people think that we don't. The club and the hackapick, which is the spiked stick, is still a legal way of killing seals. You can see, they know, and they're afraid. They weren't afraid. They wouldn't. They try to escape. It's terrible. You can see it in their faces.
Yeah. It's really horrible. Horrible. Yeah. I can't fathom 400,000 seals. I just can't even imagine that number and that there are any left.
And I think, you know, mercifully, as I said, since 2006, the hunt has been in steep decline. In 2009, the European Union put into place another ban. This time, it wasn't just on white coat seal products, it was on all seal products. So this was a pretty big issue. Canada and Norway challenged it. They took it to the World Trade Organization and argued against it. They lost. Canada appealed. They lost again. You know, so essentially now we have this ban in Europe, which closed off. It wasn't even a huge export market for Canada at the time in 2009, but it's had an impact on other countries around the world. So in 2011, Russia also banned the import of seal products. So we now have 36 international trade bans on seal products. So the world is by and large rejecting it, seal products. This year, the seal hunt, it's still a lot, but 26,000 pups were killed. It's still a lot, but, and I think that's primarily domestic market. We can't identify any big export markets for seal products right now. And I think it's going to continue to, decline. It's not an industry of the future. I think if the government stops subsidizing and stops financially supporting this industry, it will continue to disappear. It's not something, you know, people see as a, as an industry for the future. It's difficult to do. It's dangerous to do. It doesn't bring in a lot of money. This year, we're talking about $27 Canadian per seal pelt. It's not a lot of money.
Wow.
And it's not a full-time job. I think that's the other thing too, is people have this idea that hunting seals is a, is a full-time job for people. It's only maybe a month or a few weeks out of the year.
Right.
While the seals have, you know, just finished, they're just weaned from their mother. They're sitting on the ice while it breaks up, and then they migrate north, so they're out of range at the hunt. So it's a very short-term industry, which is why we see so much cruelty at the hunt. It's very competitive because they're trying to kill as many seals as they can before the ice breaks up and the seals migrate out of range.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is seal hunting a big thing in other countries? Like, even these countries that maybe ban the import of seals, are they doing their own seal hunting themselves, maybe?
It's not a big thing around the world. Russia did have its own seal hunt, which they put a hold on some years back. Norway was a big seal hunting country. From what I understand, their hunt is almost gone. It was down to one or two boats going out, and the government there decided to stop the subsidies, which were making up 80% of the sealers' income at the time. So without those subsidies, it wasn't a viable industry anymore. Right. I think, I don't have a lot of information on what's happening there, but Namibia is maybe the only other country that still has a somewhat large scale commercial seal hunt. Wow. And it's very difficult to get information about what's happening down there.
Right.
It's like whaling. There's a few countries left who do it, but by and large, it's something that's on its way out. We don't need the products that come from seals. No one needs a seal fur coat.
Yeah. Why harp seals? Was it particularly because of the white coat?
A harp seal is a species that basically they only congregate together on the ice when they're giving birth and, you know, a few weeks later for they molt their fur. But it was a time of year when there's still ice. The other fisheries hadn't yet opened. They were congregated, they were dense, they were easy to find, easy to kill, white coats essentially. And it was a way for fishermen to make that little bit of money before the other fisheries opened so that they could start repairing their gear, repairing their nets, you know, a little bit of income before get a jump on the regular fishing season.
Right.
So that's why, but you know, they were there, they were congregated, they were close to shore in many years, and they're very easy to kill. They don't try to escape.
Is there anything that particular that you think we should know that would be helpful in supporting the stopping of this?
You know, we always say to sign petitions and send letters to the government of Canada. That is still very valuable. There is actually a media article a couple of years ago where the seal hunt, I think, was the number one issue that the Prime Minister of Canada was still hearing about. It's important to keep it on the, to let Canada know that this is something that is still on the international radar, and to urge the government to instead of funding the seal hunt, which they still do financially, start funding other activities that have a benefit to marine ecosystems. Right now, we're urging the government to put, instead of supporting the seal hunt, support ways that we can remove ghost gear and marine debris from our ocean, because that's something that's going to benefit all marine wildlife and people who live on our coasts. So there are other ways to support. If it's from an economic perspective, there are other ways to support Atlantic Canadian communities and fishermen, not paying them to kill seals or spending millions of dollars every year trying to find markets for seal products. My goodness, it's been 50 years. The government's been trying to find a market for seal products. And every new crop of politicians comes and said, we're going to open the Asian market and we've struck a deal with China and we're going to export seal meat. It never happens. So, I mean, thank goodness it hasn't happened, but this is an industry that really cannot survive without considerable government support. So why are we doing it? There's a lot of culture and tradition and pride and other, you know, regional sentiment tied up with this in Canada. But I think at some point you just need to say, look, we don't need to be doing this. There's better things that we can be doing for the people and for the animals.
Yeah. If they're having such a hard time finding a market, are a lot of these seals just being sort of thrown away then?
In some years that has been, we've found that yes, they've actually admitted to dumping pelts in the ocean because they couldn't find a market for them. And I think now I think they are trying to move more to using more of the animal, which is good, but you know, yeah, we don't need.
Yeah, just.
And I think, you know, there's always going to be a very small demographic in Atlantic Canada that likes to eat seal or wear seal, but it's not a lot. And I think, you know, as that kind of tapers off, I think we're going to be just continuing to see this hunt get smaller and smaller. That's my hope anyway.
Yeah.
And my part of my work to make sure that actually happens.
So how do you spend a typical day? Are you mostly dealing with politicians or writing articles? I know you've been actually witness to these hunts, but is that mostly what you're doing, is dealing with these politicians and trying to get people to listen?
I would say prior to COVID, that was what I was doing a lot of, you know, sort of outreach and stuff like that. COVID has put a little bit of a dent into our lobbying efforts and that sort of thing. But I think also we're at a place in the campaign now. Like I said, we've had a 91% decrease in the number of seals killed since 2006. I think people are starting to recognize that this is an industry that's on the way out. So what we're doing now is really trying to focus on promoting the alternatives that we'd like to see. You know, they say that be the change you want to see in the world. So putting our efforts to how can governments and politicians help support communities in Atlantic Canada and not killing seals. We have looked into ecotourism in the past and like taking trips to see the seal pups as an alternative. That worked for a little while, but with the changing ice conditions and climate change, it's not always something people can rely on. So right now we are working with a former seal hunter in Newfoundland who has devoted his life to removing plastics and ghost gear from the ocean. And I said, this is the kind of project that the Canadian government should be supporting, right? Not paying people to kill seals. So we've been fortunate to have this partnership with Clean Harbors Initiative, which is based out of Newfoundland. And we're sort of working with them to help them, Clean Harbors in Newfoundland, removing plastics and trying to help them make that a successful enterprise on their own.
That sounds fantastic.
It's nice to be working on something positive for a change. I think we've had so many decades of the seal hunt and anti-seal hunt and the protests and the celebrities. And I think at the time there was a need for that, but you know, your environment changes, the media climate changes, people's attitudes are changing. And I think we're at a place now where sometimes if you put more pressure, you're going to get more resistance. So sometimes it's better just to back off a little bit, let the rest of the world realize that seal hunting isn't something that they need to be doing, and that there are better alternatives, and let's work to support those alternatives.
Yeah, I love the alternatives and the figuring out ways to sort of make it beneficial for everybody, for the wildlife and the people, especially if it's something that I imagine back in the day, seal hunting was really important to the natives of Canada, just like it was to, you know, the natives of Alaska.
That's an interesting point because there is also indigenous hunting of seals here in Canada. We see those as two very different hunts.
Yeah.
The Inuit do hunt seals in the north of Canada. They use seal as a source of food. It costs a ridiculous amount to get food imported up there, and it's an important source of food and clothing, and they do have some income derived from selling garments or crafts made from seal products. We see that as a very different sort of seal hunt from the one that takes place on the East Coast or Atlantic Canada. It's a different species. It's a different scale. It's a different intensity. They're not killing newborn pups. They're killing adult animals, and they're only taking a few at a time. They're not killing hundreds of thousands of animals within a 2 or 3 week span. So we've actually never campaigned against the indigenous hunting of seals, nor will we. I think it's a very different sort of activity that has different reasons and a different it's conducted differently. It's a different set of regulations here in Canada. So that's something we really try to keep separate. I think there is a justifiable need to hunt seals for food.
Yeah. Is the sealing, maybe that's not the right way to say it, the seal hunting, is that your exclusively what you work on, or do you work with other animal species or issues that are happening with other animals?
Oh, I would say for the first part of my career here, the focus was by and large on the seal hunt. But again, now that that's died off a little bit, that allows us to, allows me anyways, to work on some other things. So another thing that I've been engaged in is actually in a different part of Canada, in Alberta, which is central Western Canada. There's kind of some parallels, I guess. We have a provincial government there that is essentially poisoning wolves with strychnine because they feel that wolves are preying on caribou. The caribou are endangered. So the solution is to kill wolves, and as though that's going to help the caribou. I think everyone acknowledges that killing wolves, it's like seals and the fish. Seals are not the problem with our fish stocks. It was overfishing. Wolves are not the problem with caribou. It's their habitat destruction and fragmentation and not giving them enough space to live. But again, blaming predators is always the simple solution. And it seems to be one that politicians like to go to. Makes it look like they're doing something. And, you know, they're gone in 4 years anyways. So that's one of the things we're trying to end as well. These wolf culls in Alberta and British Columbia, and Alberta particularly, because they are using strychnine poison, which is indiscriminate. They put these baits in the forest. It kills any animal that encounters it. And then, of course, it will kill any animal that scavenges on an animal that dies having encountered it. And it travels down the food chain. And it's just a horrible, horrible way to kill an animal. Prolonged death, intense suffering. There's really no, the only justification that anyone could come up with it is because it's cheap. Like, it's terrible. And it boggles my mind that I've only been working on that part one for maybe 3 or 4 years. But it boggles my mind that this is something that still continues in Canada. And most Canadians don't know about it. And if they did, they would be horrified. Even people who hunt, I think, find something ethically wrong with putting poison in the forest to kill anything that encounters it.
Well, we're dealing with the same thing here. It's the exact same thing where, you know, we reintroduce the wolves. And it was very successful. I think it was Yellowstone. Then just in the past couple of months, they had a whole campaign to kill 1,000 of them because they say they're depleting the elk herds and they're attacking cattle, all of which is highly disputed and actually verified. And it's the same, the cyanide poisoning and the horrible snares that they put out. The insanity of it is really unbelievable.
We need to learn to coexist with wildlife. I think we've got this current situation where there's either too many of something or there's not enough and they're endangered. And we need to learn to find that we can live with animals at whatever abundance they naturally might be. Because I think one thing we've learned over the past 100 years is that when we attempt to manage wildlife or manage ecosystems, we're terrible at it. We're terrible. We just make things worse. So coexistence, I think, is a big part of what we're trying to promote as an ethos at iPhone.
I think that is going to be the only thing that works, is figuring out a coexistence.
And it's on us. The animals aren't going to learn to coexist. We need to learn to coexist.
That's exactly right. We're the only ones that have messed it up to begin with. So they were doing fine.
Yeah.
Before we interfered. Well, I'm happy to hear that you're involved with that too. I really love wolves. And
the other thing that we're working on here in Canada is the issue of, Roger might have mentioned it, with the North Atlantic right whale, which is critically endangered. There's only about 400 of them left, and they're getting entangled in fishing gear and struck by vessels in the Atlantic Ocean. So, and that's sort of a Canada-US issue. And we're working on it on both sides of the border to try to, again, promote the change we want to see, which is this transition to this ropeless fishing gear that will not entangle whales. Like, that's getting rope out of the ocean is going to be a big part of the future, I think.
Yeah. How do you fish with ropeless fishing gear?
Ropeless is a bit of a misnomer. There are ropes, but it's fewer ropes. Currently with crab and lobster gear, there's a pot or a trap on the bottom and then a vertical line that would go up to a buoy. And it's really about reducing those numbers of vertical lines. Oh. So there's a mechanism where you could have your crab pot on the bottom of the ocean, and they use an acoustic release, a trigger, so that would deflate a float, and it pops up to the ocean, and then you grapple it and bring it aboard your boat instead of having a vertical line there all the time. I mean, it's obviously much more complicated than that, and you can imagine like on an ocean with swells and waves.
Yeah.
It's not like it just pops up and you pull it in the boat. Like there's a lot of challenges, I think, on the fisherman's side on the development side, the technology side, to find a way that it works. But they've been making a lot of progress, and there's a lot of commitment, I think, on all sides, from the science, from the fishermen, from the industry, from the governments. Like, there has been a lot of really good efforts and good work going on to try to make this happen. But is it going to happen quickly enough, I think, is the real concern.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, certainly it's exciting to have people working on really new ways of doing things that are beneficial to everybody. Because, I mean, that must create jobs, and it must be exciting for people to come up with these really cool ideas of how to do something new and different that's safer for everybody.
And it's the adoption. I think it's hard for, you know, we've been fishing a certain way for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, that's true.
Change that takes a little bit to get your mind around it.
But
the fact that it is possible, and we just need to like put the investment behind it so that it can be economically feasible, I guess.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's where some of those subsidies could go, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, when you were talking about the harp seals and the ice disappearing, it's this similar thing is happening with the polar bears. Isn't that correct?
In certain parts of their range, yeah. The polar bear is a tricky one because there's, I guess, 12 different zones of them. Some of them, in most of their areas, the ice is decreasing. I think there's maybe one area where it's still okay. But yeah, these are species that are really going to be struggling with climate change, and we know that. Yeah. So what can we do now? What can we put in place now to give them a chance?
Yeah.
20 years from now, when, you know, the rubber hits the road or whatever, and it really is, I would argue it's already serious.
Yeah, I would think so.
Should be doing more now.
Yeah, I think the rubber's definitely hit the road already. Yeah. Well, you must see some beautiful areas up there when you're, you know, doing your work.
Yeah, I've been very lucky. I think you mentioned I've been out to the seal hunt 12 times, and just being out on the ice floes in the middle of the nursery with the pups and watching them interacting with the pups. They are very much like puppy dogs. They're splashing in the pools and chewing on little chunks of ice and snow, and just kind of, you know, it's just a really beautiful experience. And you know, it would be amazing if more people could experience that, I think. And if we could start to see the seals as these individual animals who have personalities and who have, you know, they're just really neat, and not see them as a resource or something to make boots and mittens and purses out of. They're fantastic animals. They're super chill.
They're so cute. I just remember seeing them when I was young. Well, is there anything you want to leave us with?
Visit IFA.org and sign the petition.
Yes. Okay. We will do that for sure. So IFA is International Fund for Animal Welfare, and all your information is on there as well as the work that you're doing. Everybody else that works for IFA is on there as well. If a petition comes from outside of Canada to the Canadian politicians, do they pay attention to people from outside the country?
I think they do. Yeah. And, you know, embassies and stuff, they keep track of how many letters they will get on the
project.
I would say a letter is better. Sometimes you see petitions circulating on social media. Not all of those actually end up going to the politician in question. They sort of just circulate and gather addresses. And so one thing is, if you do take an action on IFA.org, you can be assured that it is going to be sent immediately. The letter that you click send is going to go to the politician, and they will get it, and they will see, okay, they've gotten 30 letters from Baltimore against
right.
So that is one good thing. That's good. And it's important. Keep the letters coming. And even in your own, you know, wherever your listeners may be, taking some political action, getting in touch with your local representatives, letting them know that you care about animal issues, you care about wildlife or conservation issues. Let them know that it's important to you, because if they're not hearing from the constituents, they're not going to do anything about it. And at the end of the day, politicians are still making a lot of the decisions that affect animals and wildlife. And in many countries. So getting politically, as much as I think it's polarized and difficult a lot of times, getting politically engaged in a respectful and polite way and, you know, speaking up for wildlife and for animals whenever possible.
I think it's great. And I was really pleased to hear from Carson that the politicians in the U.S. actually do pay attention, because I really felt like, you know, it's sort of falling on deaf ears, but she said that's definitely not the case. So I thought that was very heartening to find out.
And I think in Canada as well, like they have to pay attention.
Yeah, because they're working for us, right?
Yeah.
We'll get everybody to the site to start signing some petitions and see if we can put an end to this seal hunt. It just, all these things are so archaic and they just don't need to be going on anymore. So,
yeah. And I think we're getting very close. I really do. Again, if it wasn't for one politician in the late 1990s, we wouldn't have even been here for the past
10 years.
I mean, it's just political ambition and scapegoating and blaming a predator instead of taking responsibility for some bad management decisions and allowing overfishing to continue. We need to hold our politicians accountable.
You
can't just blame wolves or blame seals every time you made a terrible decision.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a really important point to get out to the public, because I don't think a lot of us realize that that is part of the problem, you know, that these animals are just being scapegoated, as you say.
I think so.
So it's all education and letting people know what's going on so that they can do something about it.
Yeah. And, you know, having governments that will listen to science and respect the science and not just doing what's politically popular at a given moment.
Well, that's excellent. I so appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. This is fantastic. Like raising awareness about all of these different animal issues is so necessary.
I think it is. Yeah. We got to start paying attention or we're not going to be here anymore. Thank you so much, Cheryl. It just was great speaking with you.
And nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. And good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hello Animal Talks, hosted by me, Jenny Worthington, production by Stacy Spencer of Going Graphic, sound engineered by Jimmy Richards of Bay Central Media, and music written and performed by Jake Shepard.